At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, Rohan Nadkarni is here fresh from his Southern California estate. Finished a round of surfing in the afternoon and is kind enough to rejoin me here on the podcast. What's up, Rohan?
You know, Chris, I appreciate that you think I have the ability to surf. That means a lot to me. I'm not typically known for my balance, so I appreciate you throwing it out there that I indeed can surf.
Well, I mean, the beaches of Southern California are flooded right now. I'm not exactly sure what your people are doing during all this. I feel like there's got to be a medium between the people that don't want to go anywhere and the people that just want to say, screw it, open everything up. Like, how about we can get back to work, but maybe not, you know, spend all weekend at the beach? Like, can we agree that that may be a prudent solution to all this?
Listen, you have my vote. I can't speak for what people are doing in Orange County, which is like its own unique hellscape. I did see someone eating alone in a patio at like a very average diner the other day, and that also made me sad. Like, I understand people want things to open, but if it comes down to like eating alone at a very, very average restaurant, like maybe it's not worth it for that either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would agree. I think staying home might be the better course of action on that one. All right, let's talk about what's going on in the NBA right now, because the NBA is not planning on staying home. The league is set to return in Orlando. 22 teams will convene down in Central Florida. There will be an 8 regular season games to determine seeding and give the 6 teams currently on the outside looking in a chance to make the playoffs. There are other machinations here. There could be a play-in game for the number 8 seed if the 9 seed is within 4 games, so that allows them a chance to make up ground without having to make up all the ground in that conference, and gives the NBA maybe a little bit more juice going into the postseason. So give me your overall thoughts on what the NBA settled on for its return to play in 2020.
I think they ultimately made the most sensible call in terms of if the situation is they're playing no matter what. I understand why this makes sense. It's obvious that they have a financial motivation to get back on the floor. And I think having 22 teams there is kind of, you know, for them, the happy medium between, you know, they don't want to go right into the playoffs and have this long layoff and kind of risk the integrity of the playoffs. I think more than anything, the 8 games is going to be a tune-up for some of the good teams. I know that they are adding in these wrinkles like the play-in tournament and, you know, the tiebreaker situation and all this kind of stuff to maybe add some intrigue. I'm really just looking at it as this is a tune-up for the playoff team. So from that aspect, I understand what they're doing. I think it makes more sense to do this than bringing all 30 teams back. I think the conversation still goes back to, was this the right call? I think that's still a little bit up in the air. Just the situation in Florida itself is already unclear. You know, something I actually wrote about today, Chris, and I think it's interesting. Adam Silver, I think, has been lauded for kind of the stances he's taken throughout his tenure as commissioner, whether it was Donald Sterling or moving the All-Star game or even the China situation to a degree. I think those decisions were, in retrospect, and even at the time, a lot easier than the one he has to make right now. You know, I don't think booting a racist like Donald Sterling out of the NBA ultimately is as brave as maybe it seemed at the time, or moving an All-Star game in a city that was, you know, trying to propose anti-trans legislation. This situation is a lot more risky than what Adam Silver has had to deal with in the past. And that's what's fascinating to me about this is how high is the NBA's risk tolerance for making money?
Well, it underscores a fact about Adam Silver that has been repeated to me by a number of top basketball executives that, yes, Adam Silver is progressive. Yes, Adam Silver does believe in setting a good example as a league. But as the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver is about the bottom dollar. And this return to play for the NBA, look, let's not, you know, twist it. Like, this is about money. You know, this is about making good on those national television contracts that they have obligations for. In bringing 22 teams back, it gives them a chance to make good on the 22 regional contracts that the NBA has obligations for. I mean, if they didn't come back at all, there would be so I don't even want to count how many financial ramifications there would be that the NBA have to deal with in the 2020-2021 season. So this was done overwhelmingly for financial reasons, but I don't think it can. It's mutually exclusive with is it right to come back to play? I think both those things can be true. Now, the NBA definitely moved the goalposts with their criteria for coming back. If you remember back in April, Adam Silver said something to the effect of, we want to see coronavirus infections trending down. Well, to your point earlier, Florida, they're not trending down. In fact, in recent days, they have spiked with the number of new cases that have been reported. So it doesn't really fit that criteria. All that being said, the NBA is doing everything humanly possible to provide a safe environment for players, families of players, coaches, staffers, all that. So, look, to me, it comes down to, do you want to, you know, get back to work under circumstances where there's no chance you can contract coronavirus? If that's the case, I respect that position. But that position may not be a reality until, like, middle of 2021. Like, this coronavirus is here to stay for the foreseeable future. It'll ebb and flow, but it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So if you're waiting for that day, okay, keep waiting. The NBA decided that they're not going to wait. They're going to go to a state that has welcomed professional sports. That's what Florida has done. And they're going to try to create the safest possible bubble. I'm with you on the idea that it is much easier to toss Donald Sterling out on his ass. It is much easier to look at a bad bathroom bill passed in North Carolina and say, you know what? We're getting out of that state for this cycle. This could be a defining moment. If the NBA goes down there and has a seamless postseason, Adam Silver's going to look great. The league's going to look great. It's going to look at the right decision. But if suddenly there's a rash of infections, and worse, if there's an older staffer or coach or somebody that has something more significant happen to them, I mean, there's going to be a lot of Monday morning quarterbacks out there saying the NBA never should have come back.
Without a doubt. And I know that people want to hear us talk about basketball, and I want to talk about basketball. I'm excited to talk about basketball. I'll just bring up, you know, kind of one last thing, because I agree with you. That's what I wrote about today. I think this is going to be the defining moment for Adam Silver as a commissioner. And what's fascinating to me is just the cultural moment this is happening in. You know, Chris, I think we're living in a time right now where people are demanding actions. They're not just demanding words. They're demanding actions of their institutions. And at the very least, I think right now, we're expecting people to do things, you know, that are socially conscious, that are conscious of kind of the greater issues we're dealing with as a society. And I think what's really going to be interesting for the NBA is, like you said, what decisions are they going to make when they get some bumps in the road in Orlando? Maybe it goes completely, completely seamlessly, and Adam Silver is a hero forever. But how high of that risk tolerance are they willing to reach if they get some bumps in the road in Orlando? Are they willing to have a second shutdown? I think that is what's going to be so interesting to watch as this unfolds.
Yeah, look, they're not willing to have a second shutdown. I mean, they're going to have every procedure in place to deal with an infected player. And look, there are plenty of lingering issues, but that have to be worked out between the union and the players. Length of time for quarantine of a positive test. Look, positive tests are going to happen. Like, if you think it's that nobody's going to test positive, you're crazy. I mean, I covering boxing, boxing's very first major North American show happened on Tuesday. And a day before, 2 days before it was supposed to happen, the co-main event, Michaela Mayer, she tested positive for coronavirus. This is on the very first show that they were scheduled to do. So with all the people down in Florida and with all the risk of infection that's there, there's going to be a player or two, maybe more, that test positive. How the NBA handles it, I think, is still being worked out. How many people can be down there with these players is still going to be worked out. But I thought something was interesting, and we're kind of learning about this in real time. ESPN reporting that there are a faction of players that are discussing whether or not it was the right move to go to Orlando. Some of them reportedly have, you know, they have different concerns, whether it's COVID-19, how many people can go with them, you know, certainly the social justice issues that exist in today's landscape. But there are a number of players that are openly discussing whether or not to go. And this really doesn't surprise me at all, because I thought going in that there would be a handful of guys that for different reasons said, I don't want to go. If you are someone with, you know, a family member that is immunosuppressant or as a high-risk person, maybe you don't want to take the chance at that point. If you're someone with a new child, I've used Giannis as an example. He famously had his son very recently. What if you have to be away from? What if you don't want to be part of, don't want to be that separated for as many as, 4 months? Everybody's got their own set of circumstances to deal with. And I thought that report was really interesting. I thought there might be a handful of players. According to ESPN, there's maybe dozens that are discussing just whether or not it's the right thing to do to come back.
That report really was interesting. And it's funny because when we talk about this layoff, and I think so often we're focused on the physical effects of what it would mean for an NBA player to return after taking all these months off. I don't know if anyone's really brought up what are the kind of mental effects it would have to live in this campus environment for 3 months, 2 months. Like you said, what if someone is immunosuppressant and doesn't want to bring their family over no matter what, even if they're allowed to after the first round? Are you willing to live in Orlando at a theme park for 3 months? I think there's going to be so many kind of intangible issues for players here, just kind of living in this environment that's unlike anything they could have ever imagined heading into this season, that I'm not surprised that some guys are like, I don't want to sign up for this. I'm at home where I'm safe right now, and I can keep an eye on, like you said, not just, you know, their family during this pandemic, but the protests that are happening, being able to speak up on all the issues that are affecting them personally right now. There's just a lot to sort out, and something that has surprised me. Another reason why I'm not, you know, shocked to hear that some players don't love this idea. You know, we have the details for how the season is going to go that are finalized. We don't really have all the health details yet. And I'm surprised that the NBA has allowed kind of the return plans to leak without finalizing all the health details first.
Well, one area I'd push back is like the mental part of being quarantined there. It's not Alcatraz here. Like, you're going to be quarantined in Disney World. Like, you're staying at a 5-star hotel down there. I mean, the family issues, I get. The health and safety concerns, I get. But if you just don't want to be spend that much time in one spot because it could be mentally draining, I mean, you're staying in a hotel suite with access to room service or whatever it is they have ultimately down there. That doesn't do a heck of a lot for me. There are other myriad issues, and I get it. And look, one thing I would say, and I think the NBA agrees, is that if a player decides he doesn't want to go and there are legitimate reasons for it, there shouldn't be any repercussions. Even if it's just, look, I'm scared for a family member. My mother or mother-in-law that's living with us has a heart condition or is recovering from cancer. I mean, I'm just making this stuff up right now, but if there are legitimate health concerns, safety concerns for others, I mean, yeah, I think that's just the way it goes. Like the NBA, like they can't, in a regular season, they can't guarantee a player is going to stay healthy. But what they can't guarantee is that you're not going to tear your ACL or, you know, sprain your ankle or have any kind of major shoulder injury, whatever. In this situation, there's the possibility that a player can contract a virus that we still don't know everything about. We still have no idea, like, the long-term health on the lungs or you know, other important internal organs that affect a player potentially for the rest of his life. So I'm not saying you need to be just overzealous with the caution, but if a player has a reasonable excuse for not wanting to play, I don't think the NBA should fight them on it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. I do think ultimately a player should feel 100% comfortable or whatever that threshold is for them to decide if they want to go. And they don't need to be, you know, crucified for not wanting to take part in what is frankly an experiment.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, so on the basketball front, it's hard, and I get asked this all the time on the radio and other interviews, like, what's a team going to look like when they come back? Who's the favorite coming back? We have no idea at this point. I have no idea what, you know, how many players gained 20 pounds, how many players lost 20 pounds, how a player who hasn't shot the ball in 2 months is going to be able to get his stroke back in 6 weeks. Like, there's just so many unknowns when it comes to that. But the benefits from the from this four-month break, from a kind of macro perspective, I'm going to say the Philadelphia 76ers could be the big winner here. And here's why. You go into this postseason, and I would think that skills are going to be rusty, right? Like, you have a lot of time off, and you've got a situation where you can't work out all that much. So I don't think guys are going to come back in midseason form, even with 6 weeks and 8 regular season games, to work out some of the kinks. Philadelphia, not big on the skills. Like, not huge skill guys, especially when it comes to one skill in particular, three-point shooting. And that's an area of the game, Rohan, that I think could really struggle on the way back. We could see some college-like three-point shooting percentages in the postseason as guys who haven't shot threes in an NBA game for a long time try to rediscover their stroke. Philadelphia doesn't really have any three-point shooters. Like, Tobias Harris is, like, one of the guys. Handful of other guys that might be able to make some threes. Look, if you have a team that doesn't shoot threes, that looks like they're perfectly comfortable in one of those 90 to 86 type slugfests, that has a great interior presence in Joel Embiid. And I saw an interview Joel Embiid did today with NBA.com where Embiid said he's been working out 6 times a day. So maybe he's actually in shape and ready to go. If that's the case, I'm buying and betting big on the 76ers. One odds maker I saw had the Sixers at 20-1. I'm going all in on them, Rohan, at 20-1 to win the championship. I think they are being incredibly undervalued given the circumstances. If you don't rely on three-point shooting, if you're a defensive-minded team, if you have an absolute menace in the low post that you can play through, I think you're the team that's going to benefit the most from this layoff.
Okay, first of all, I just love this position from you. I think it's you really zeroed in on something, and I think you're right. There's going to be a lot of weird variance, and three-point shooting is already such a high variable area that I think you're on to something. This is not a good theory. I also love the idea that the NBA is all of a sudden going to return to, like, late 90s, early 2000s basketball because everybody kind of forgot how to shoot. Like, or if they're allowed to sign replacement players, is someone going to go scoop up Zach Randolph? Is someone going to go scoop up Al Jefferson from the conference finals? I would love nothing more than for the situation you're describing to be true, if only to see teams try to refigure out how to play a new style of basketball. Now, to your point, I do think things are going to be really weird. Like you said, we have no idea what these guys are going to look like when they come back. So what I would add is I think the teams with a lot of veteran guys are really in the best position to succeed here. And I do kind of wonder how this would affect a team like, let's say, Milwaukee. Or let's take the Miami Heat, for example, okay? You know, the Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler famously sent his teammates, a basketball hoop so they could all set it up and shoot. You know, all those young guys, they don't live in big houses where they have room to set up a basketball hoop. You know, Bam Adebayo lives in a condo on the 50th floor. This is going to sound really stupid in a second because I'm going to be the guy who's like, here's why I like the Lakers and Clippers. It's not just because they're really good, but you have someone like LeBron James who had access to a gym, access to a hoop. I think these little things are actually going to make a huge difference. Who do you trust to take care of their body better over the last few months? LeBron James or, you know, guys like Tyler Hero or Duncan Robinson or Pat Connaughton or maybe younger guys in the league who don't take this kind of stuff as seriously as players in their late 20s and early 30s. So I actually really think the layoff is going to favor veteran guys, which I know might seem a little bit weird because you know, you're in your mid-30s and you just took 4 months off. But I think those guys take nutrition and training so much more seriously, and they have access to so much more of it than guys earlier in their careers, that I think it could make a significant difference.
No, I think that could make a difference, and that's solid conventional wisdom there. I mean, you look at some other variables, like a guy like Mike Conley having a gym in his home, you know, probably makes him better off going into it. Whereas, you know, Giannis and Jason Tatum and guys like that who are in more northern climates have talked about their inability to get going. But veterans certainly taking care of their body. And you know, in case of veterans, Kawhi Leonard, I mean, you would assume his knee benefits greatly from having 4 months off and not playing basketball and not really having back-to-backs going for the rest of this season. So, yeah, I think that's certainly possible. But I'm sticking with my Philadelphia prediction right there. I'm going all in on the 76ers.
Not only is it a great prediction, the fact that you're saying you're going all in, you're giving me betting odds, I really enjoy it. I'll just add in to my point real quick. I can't tell you how many players I've interviewed. And, you know, you at some point when you're interviewing a basketball player, inevitably you'll ask, what's something you wish you told your younger self? And every single time they say, you know, I wish I'd taken care of my body better. I wish I didn't eat all those cheeseburgers when I was 24 years old. I'm just going to throw that out there, which is why, like, I'm a little worried about how some of these young guys handle the quarantine.
I say that to myself daily. Boy, I wish when I was younger yesterday, I didn't eat that buffalo chicken sandwich and try the salad instead, but never seems to change. One other piece of information that came in the last week about the resumed season is that the Nets will go into it without Kevin Durant and without Kyrie Irving. Now, the Durant decision not to play is incredibly unsurprising. Like, I never believed that Kevin Durant was going to return for the resumed season. I think the Nets, who have always been a little leery of speaking for Durant, just wanted to keep that door open and allow him to close it, to let him go on his own timetable. But if push came to shove and Durant said to them, I want to play, I'm not sure the Nets would even allow it. Fortunately, Durant, his management team, they didn't take it that far, because the idea of a guy coming off an Achilles injury, which is the most significant injury an NBA player can deal with. It is the Achilles today is what the ACL used to be 3 decades ago. It is potentially career-ending, and it certainly can be career-changing, especially for bigger, taller players that rely, you know, more on, or special players like Durant, who relies more on movement on the outside. Why you would drop him back into a super intense atmosphere like the playoffs on a team that, even with him, probably didn't have a great chance of winning a championship, never made any sense. It never did. I mean, this was a guy that just a year ago, you had a somewhat similar situation where you had Durant coming off a major injury, a different type of injury, but a major injury, dropped right into Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and he tears his Achilles. Now, you can argue whether one had anything to do with the other, but under normal circumstances, Durant would have had more of a ramp-up coming back from that injury. He would have had a few regular season games, limited minutes, all that stuff. The idea that with an Achilles injury, you'd put him back in that situation is just nuts, especially when you factor in, like, Durant, when he comes back, is not going to be, you know, Itals, Kevin Durant. Like, he's not going to be that guy. It's going to take him some time to get his rhythm, to get his timing, to get his body right. You're not going to do it in a truncated postseason. It's just not going to happen. So, to me, this was the right decision. No KD, no Kyrie. See if you can make a run with this group, see what happens, and then go into next year, whenever that starts, with a group that is at least built to win a championship.
I don't know if it's the pandemic that's allowed us to, like, have this sense of clarity or mind meld, but I could not agree with you more. And I think what we're both anticipating is there's no doubt that some people are going to try to make this some kind of discussion topic. Should Kyrie and KD, have come back? Why in the world would you throw Kevin Durant into this test lab situation? Like you said, he just went through this the last time he tried to play basketball, where he came back from injury and was dropped into a high-pressure situation and ended up tearing his Achilles, especially considering the Nets. Headed into this season, the Nets knew this was going to be kind of a holding pattern year. You know what I mean? They knew with Durant hurt, this wasn't really going to be their final form. And there's no reason amid all of the circumstances right now to push this any further. I mean, you're going to put Durant out there with an interim coach and, you know, all these kinds of things. It's just not worth it. You know, it's not even like the Nets are, you know, we assumed they were going to have like a great playoff run or kind of do anything even similar to what they did last year. They've been kind of a middling team for most of this year. There's just so many reasons not to do this that it's crazy to me that some people are even trying to make this a talking point. To me, it's obvious that you keep both those guys off the floor.
Yeah, you sign both these guys to four-year deals, knowing coming into it that year one was probably kind of a redshirt year. You know, Durant was coming off the injury, most likely wasn't going to play, and just because this opportunity to bring him back on a later time frame arose shouldn't change your planning, and ultimately it didn't change its planning. So smart move by everybody involved. Get through this postseason, then pick up next year with Durant, Kyrie Irving, the rest of that group, and see if you can win a championship. One of the other fallouts of the whole scheduling issue is when next season actually starts. Now, Travis Schlenk, the Hawks GM, was speaking with local reporters this week, and look, he suggested that the NBA's timeline, which tentatively has them starting on December 1st, that still has to be approved by the union, which is another story, is all about getting back on a normal track where you can sort of squeeze some things together and get your season finished in mid to late June and get back on a regular schedule. What do you make of that, Rowan? What do you make of the idea of the NBA pushing so hard to get back on a regular schedule?
I understand why they want to get back on a regular schedule in the same way that we all want to get back on a regular schedule, but that timeline seemed an awful lot like wishful thinking to me. I mean, is the idea that they're going to start play on December 1st like a normal season and every team is in their own city? Are we sure it's going to be safer? You know, a lot of people saying there could be another wave in the winter as temperatures drop again. I really just found the whole timeline a bit confusing because I think they need to get through this bubble situation first and see how this goes, you know, kind of assess the consequences and fallout of whatever they're trying right now. I mean, what if they need to set up another bubble or something like that again? So I really just found the timeline to be wishful thinking. To me, I would be very surprised if they're able to start on December 1st with every team in their own city and people kind of traveling around again. Now, again, the obvious caveat here is we have no idea how this is going to change between now and December. I mean, think about how much things have changed between January and June 10th, which is when we're recording this, but you know, a lot can change, obviously, in 6 months, whether that's advances in testing, tracing, a vaccine, treatment, whatever the case may be. But to me, the timeline, I'm almost surprised they even put a start date out there because I think it kind of creates pressure to start the league when they're not going to have the answers yet.
Yeah, I mean, practically speaking, it makes more sense to push the start date back if for no other reason than you can – you know, enhance your chances of getting fans in the stands. I mean, maybe come December 1st, we're back to normal civilization, but maybe it needs a few more weeks. And, you know, Adam Silver has said gate revenue or, you know, fan-related revenue accounts for 40% of the league's overall revenue. So that's certainly not an insignificant number. The bigger issue I have is that I feel like this is an opportunity for the NBA to see what happens with a summer schedule. Now, this has been floated before as recently as March when Steve Kooning came out and said that, you know, there was a plan or a tentative plan to present about the NBA beginning its season around Christmas and ending at some point in August. That has a few fans amongst league types, but most prefer to keep it on the normal schedule. With this pandemic hitting and the NBA having to shake things up so much, this would have been a perfect opportunity to try something new. Start the season around Christmas, which is when most casual fans think the NBA actually starts anyway. Avoid football, and then go into the summer and see if the ratings are comparable or better to what they would be otherwise. See if you can pick up some momentum in regular season ratings being away from football and see if you can improve your postseason ratings being away from everything else and only having to deal with baseball in the summer months. Now, the argument always is that summertime ratings go down. Like, that to me has always been a chicken and the egg argument, Rowan. Like, summer ratings go down because we put crap on TV. Like, nobody puts anything good on TV, and more often than not, when you do put something good on TV, it draws decent ratings. Like, I go back to combat sports, but, you know, it was August, I think, 2017. Floyd Mayweather fought Conor McGregor. That was in the dead of August. It did something like 4+ million pay-per-view buys. When you put something good on TV in the summertime, people will watch it. Historically, networks don't. But as networks have become less relevant, streaming services have, their numbers are high. People do watch television or watch on devices in the summertime. So, like, this could have been just one of those opportunities where the NBA says, look, to get back to give guys rest and get back to some kind of normal cycle, we have got to extend it into Christmas, try it out, see what happens. And if it doesn't work, if your season actually does end in August, you can get back to a normal schedule. You can tighten up the postseason or tighten up the off season and start back in like late November, early December of the following year. I just think the NBA is blowing it here. I think this would have been a good opportunity or would be a good opportunity to try something new that could be really beneficial for the league in the long term.
You know, I have to agree here. Two things. First of all, it is very funny that the NBA was presented with this opportunity. It's like, present like your dream timeline of how the season's going to resume, and they're like, a condensed season that would start December 1st. I'm with you. Even if the coronavirus pandemic changes your plans, why not at least float the idea of starting on Christmas out there? Something like people around the league, in the league, players, people have been discussing for years. Why not even float it out there? You don't have to commit to it right now. At least get an idea of what the response would be like. You know what I mean? Like, what if they had put in that timeline, we're going to start the season on December 25th, and everyone all of a sudden is like, oh my God, we love this idea. Like, all of these things, like, at least you could have had an opportunity to gauge the public response. It's weird to me that they wouldn't even float that idea out there. And to your point about TV, I couldn't agree more. Like, we kind of live in an era where people gravitate towards event-tized TV. Like, I'm with you. The networks could not be, you know, less relevant, especially amongst the audience the NBA is trying to court. People are going to gravitate toward, you know, event television. And if the NBA playoffs are happening, you know, in late July and August, people are going to watch because it's an event. It's what people are talking about. It's going to dominate the conversation. I'm not saying it's going to be exactly like The Last Dance, which obviously was a perfect storm, but there is this idea that if everyone sees that's what is dominating the conversation, that's what people are going to talk about, you know, viewers are going to gravitate towards that. So I'm kind of with you. They even just simply missed an opportunity to gauge the public reaction to the idea of starting on Christmas, which would have been a very easy step for them to take right now, considering they don't have to commit to any plan for months.
Yeah, and they may be forced to ultimately, because you saw Michelle Roberts express some curiosity about the NBA's plan to start on December 1st. But from what I hear, a lot of people within the union are not interested at all in starting December 1st. They don't want that quick a turnaround time for some of their players that are going deep into the playoffs. So the NBA may be forced to ultimately do that if the union balks and says we need at least till Christmas to bring the schedule back. Let's finish on a more serious note here, Rohan. You've got the killing of George Floyd out in Minneapolis just a couple of weeks ago now. The NBA, like other sports leagues, have issued statements on this. Teams, you know, the Knicks and Spurs excluded, the Knicks actually came out and said something very recently, have been very public with their statements about it. What have you made of the NBA's response, including some of the stuff players have done, which I think has been really impressive in showing up at rallies and marching and things like that? What have you made of what you've seen from the league response? And more specifically, what do you think the league should do moving forward?
This is a really good question, Chris. And this is something I'm personally pretty passionate about. And I have a couple things to say here. First of all, I think what the players have done, especially like you mentioned, seeing photos of Russell Westbrook and DeMar DeRozan protesting in Los Angeles, like everyone else protesting in Los Angeles, like that's really impactful. That kind of shows the importance of this movement and what's happening right now. That, you know, you can be Russell Westbrook, who's been on the cover of Sports Illustrated, on the cover of GQ, but you still experience the negative effects of being a black person in this country. And I think what the players have done, especially whether it's Jaylen Brown, Trae Young, Steven Jackson, all these people who've really put their money where their mouth is, so to speak, showing up at these protests, it's really important, and they should be commended for doing that. I'm a little bit more skeptical of what the teams have done so far, and I think their statements demand a little bit more scrutiny. You know, Chris, I wrote about this and I was looking through. I think it was something, you know, start here. I think only four teams even mentioned that George Floyd was killed or murdered. And in two of those statements, they were actually written by coaches. It was Dwayne Casey and Doc Rivers. You know, language is important here. Your actions are important here. And I think it's imperative that you acknowledge, you know, a lot of these statements say the death of George Floyd. That's too passive. George Floyd was killed. He was murdered. You know, it's important to start there. And I think, you know, these teams, a lot of them are sending out statements that acknowledge systemic racism or say they condemn racism. For me personally, that's not a stance. That's the baseline. You know, I don't think, you know, the Golden State Warriors need to release a statement saying they condemn racism. That should be obvious. And I think what I want to see from teams moving forward is what are your actions going to be? Are you going to be involved in your community? And we've seen athletes, you know, doing this for years. He's not an NBA player, but Kenny Stills, who used to play for the Miami Dolphins, now most recently for the Houston Texans, kneeled for the national anthem. Something that he did when he was a member of the Dolphins that was incredible was, you know, literally going to police stations and having conversations with officers, going around the country, you know, talking to as many different people in different communities as he could, and kind of getting involved and trying to take actions, find out how he could have an impact, you know, in different places. And that's the kind of stuff I want to see teams do. You know, I don't think this is the kind of problem where as much as donations are very important, as much as resources are very important, it's not something you can just throw money at. It's what are the actions you're willing to take? Are you going to host a Black Lives Matter night at your arena? Are you going to put yourself in the uncomfortable conversation that you have to have when it comes to how policing should work in this community? You know, Chris, a conversation I had with a general manager one time that was really interesting and illuminating to me was, I always ask GMs, do you have as much fun as we do, you know, talking about trades and all those kinds of things? And what the GM told me was, you know, my job isn't just making trades. It's knowing the city manager. It's knowing the mayor. It's being involved locally. You know, you have off-duty cops who work as security guards at NBA arenas. These teams have massive influence in their communities. They ask for taxpayer money. What NBA teams do are very heavily intertwined with their local politics. So they have the opportunity to take actions here that are going to materially make the lives of people protesting better. And that's kind of what I want to see happen moving forward.
Yeah, look, I agree. And statements are great. Statements are meaningful. They're impactful, what have you. But actions speak louder. And all the actions you're talking about are necessary. But one of the actions I'm most interested in watching as we advance this forward is, how does the NBA respond if players choose to demonstrate during games? If you do see players kneel during the national anthem or sit during the national anthem or, I don't know, whatever they decide to do, how supportive is the NBA going to be? Now, you might say, well, the NBA is progressive. They'll be incredibly supportive. And those things are true. But I remember back in 2017, and I wrote about this at the time, when Donald Trump started going after NBA player or NFL players for kneeling, NBA players were just getting into their season, and they started to get asked about it. Will you kneel during the national anthem? Now, several players said no. I know LeBron James was one who said, my voice is more powerful, and you know that's certainly a respectable position. But other players considered it. J.R. Smith at the time said he considered it. And I remember back then, Kobe Bryant was like a year into retirement, and he said, I would have done it. He said, if I was still playing, I would have kneeled. And I remember being at these, you know, Board of Governors press availabilities and asking Adam Silver, like, you know, how will the league respond if a player kneels? And the response I got, and I'm paraphrasing here, was like, we've got a rule, and we expect players to follow the rule. Now, I don't know. Is that the position the league should take if something like that happens? And, you know, will the league be able to stand firm if Donald Trump gets involved again? Like, you know, it's an election year. Like, if Donald Trump decides he wants to rally his base, who apparently think kneeling during the national anthem is this, you know, cardinal sin and federal crime, then how would the league respond to that? Because that could affect their money. That could affect their bottom line. And that's what I'm most interested to see. I think what the league's done so far has been great. I mean, what watching Karl Anthony Towns, just like a month removed from losing his mother to coronavirus, standing there alongside Steven Jackson at that Minnesota press conference, that was powerful. Watching Jaylen Brown and Malcolm Brogdon and Trey Young and, you know, go down the list. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. was in Fayetteville. Tobias Harris was in Philadelphia. What these guys are doing is nothing short of courageous. It really is. And the message they're sending is so strong. And I think the NBA to this point has really done a good job backing them up. We can quibble about the word choice for sure, but I think what the NBA has done as in totality has been great at backing them up. I'm very interested to see what it looks like moving forward. Will that same conviction that the NBA has backing players up now, will it continue if a player or two players or a bunch of players decide to demonstrate during the national anthem or do something that is against league guidelines or protocols? I mean, I think that will be maybe the first real test for the league and how it supports these players.
For sure. And to your point, you know, like you said, I think the league made it very clear around the time when anthem protests were reaching their fever pitch, or police brutality protests, I should say, or anthem demonstrations. You know, the league made it very clear, we expect our players to stand for the national anthem. And I think, in a sense, the league kind of lucked out that the players were more willing to use their voices instead, because, you know, to kind of go back to how we started this conversation, I think in a lot of situations, Adam Silver has been presented with, in many ways, almost an obvious choice. And it was an obvious choice for him to let his players, you know, speak out politically, because the league didn't really have to take an official stance then. But the league is going to have to take a stance of sorts if players decide to kneel. And, you know, to your point about what it would do if Trump said something, I think what we've seen over the last few months, Adam Silver, I don't know if we'd call them friends, but he does have a relationship with Donald Trump. He got on that phone call with other, you know, sports league commissioners to kind of discuss what their plans moving forward. The NBA is working with the federal government on getting, you know, players like Luka Doncic back from overseas. So I do think that there is some relationship between Adam Silver and Donald Trump that if the players do start demonstrating and Trump, you know, does start tweeting about it, which is probably the most likely scenario, I do think that's going to be another situation where we're going to see where Adam Silver's loyalties lie. And that will be, you know, some level of a test for him.
Yeah. And look, maybe they won't. And I think LeBron has a strong point when he said, my voice is more powerful. NBA players individually are far more visible and I think have far more powerful voices than any player in any other sport. And I think they're just, you know, the league is as over, you know, back in the David Stern era has done such a job at, you know, emphasizing the individuality of the players. It's not, you know, Lakers versus Celtics. It's LeBron versus Jason Tatum or whatever you want to say is the matchup there. So I think individual players have strong voices, and maybe that is the more prudent choice, more powerful choice to continue going on social media, continue demonstrating outside, continue to lead by example. But if players, or even if it's just one player, decides to demonstrate during a game during this upcoming resume season, you'd hope the NBA will back them up and not, you know, cave to some of the pressures, the outside pressure that could be out there. But you're not going to know until we get ourselves into it. So, you know, we'll see about how that goes. Rohan, always appreciate it, man. Stay safe out there in California, and we'll catch up again soon.
Sounds good, Chris. You too, man.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.